Hello everyone, Mexa here, and I am joined with Greytone.
Hello, everybody.
And today, in this podcast, we're going to talk about the art of character generation. This topic was selected by Greytone, so I will let him start it off.
Throw me right into it, huh? So, because this was not something we came up with just before we started recording this. But to all of our friends who we asked for podcast suggestions, thank you guys for that just flood of requests that did not show up. But we definitely wanted to do something tonight, so I thought character generation would be something interesting to talk about. Recently, I've had the pleasure to start a new game and had to create a new first level character. Now, I've got kind of a unique way I go about creating characters, and want to talk a little bit about that, then also talk to Nexa about how he created characters for the game that I'm running with him. We recently started a new game where he jumped in there and had to create a new first level character. But to kind of get the ball rolling, for me, all of my characters are all related to one another. It's one gigantic family of gray tomes. And I've recently was challenged by one of my DMs that I'm in a game he's running, and also he's in a game that I'm running, to get outside of my comfort zone, because forever I was always creating wizards. There was a wizard named Greytome. It was a wizard named Greytome. Always the same thing. Every game I had, it was a wizard. His name was Greytome. So it was basically just retreads the same character over and over and over again. And then I started mixing up the spells. Oh, instead of evocation, which I was always taking, let's go with conjuration. Let's play around with which school of magic they work with. And in working with that, it started to kind of come across my mind that, you know, there's all these gray tomes. What if it wasn't a character? What if they're not the same person in different versions of this? But what if they were all different people, but it wasn't the character's name's gray tome? What if that was the family name, the gray tome family? What if they were all related, which kind of branched out and I was able to start working on different character origins. A half orc gray tome who's a barbarian, a rogue gray tome who has no magical talent, a bard who prefers, you know, isn't into the book study that traditional wizards need, and would prefer to be performing, and has an aptitude for music, and wants to go that route. So when I'm generating the character, I start off with kind of a blank slate, and then how is this character going to fit into the family of characters? For me right now, I'm moving more into martial classes. Just created a ranger gray tome, Philana gray tome, for a game that came up, and she is a ranger character, which is a big departure for me. First time I've played a ranger in I don't know how long, where it's something, yeah, there is some spell casting to it, and there's argument to me that bards are spell casters, but not in the same vein as a traditional wizard class. But it was really interesting to kind of branch out and get under the hood of a character class that I hadn't really experimented with. I'd always been creating wizards. We always had, knew exactly how many hit points had, and the only variation was what spells I chose at first level and beyond. Now I get into these martial classes, and there's different abilities that you can use, different tactics and techniques that you have. I created the half-orc barbarian gray tome, Crumb gray tome, and worked all this in. Each character gets worked into their role in the greater family. Who are they? And I mapped out a family tree. These characters are all related. Who are their cousins? Who are their parents? Where do they fit into the hierarchy of the family? And who's getting along with who? And is there friction between them? Which will kind of come to a little bit later in this podcast. But with Nexus game recently in Pathfinder, I created a half-orc barbarian. Was thrilled to do that. Never played a frontline fighter. Never a character that charges into battle. I'm always in the back, casting spells, you know, and then, you know, dropping the fireballs and lightning bolts, and it's just, you know, it's all thunder, lightning, oh, so very frightening. As opposed to, okay, I'm charging up to get in that big bad's face, and, you know, I'm going to dispense some justice with an axe. It was a lot of fun. It was the first time I really ran something where I was the thick one. I was, okay, you're the tank. get up there and do your thing. So Crumb gets to start swinging around bashing skeletons. So, but for me, the character concept comes from how it fits into the family. And I know a lot of people have an individual character, whereas mine, it's going to be, okay, where do they fit in the family? And then how are they related to all the other characters that I've made for different games? Everything from Starfinder to Pathfinder to D&D, Marvel superheroes. They're all interconnected. They're all related. And then what I call like the Great Tome verse, where it branches out into different realities, because the Marvel superhero Great Tomes are a little different than the Starfinder Great Tome, than the Pathfinder Great Tomes, and the D&D Great Tomes. But I can, in my headcanon, inside my story that I'm telling, these characters are all related through the multiverse. Yeah, they're all interconnected in some way, shape, or form, usually through a magical thread. That's the one thing. They have some sort of magical ability that runs in the bloodline. And there's a little hint of it in all of them, in the way I kind of build the characters. But
well, I want to link on to that, because I basically am the same way in that most of my characters are all connected. Though they may not be actual bloodline relatives or family, some of them may be, but I envision that one day they would all cross paths in one point or the other. And so how I actually generate my character is, the first thing I do is sometimes I want to see what the party needs, and if it's something that I haven't played, something that would offer a challenge to me. And then the second thing is, usually, as of late, I've been using the standard, you know, basic character stat block, and where all the feats are kind of selected for you, and then I just work on the story from there. For example, the character in Great Tomes game, the Curse of Strahd, that was just a normal basic stat generated character, and it select folk hero. So then what I did is I went and kind of fleshed that out and started discussing like how this person, or how my character Aslan, was actually a farm boy / dock worker who had visions of being a great warrior, whose town was being plagued by a dragon, and that he wanted to one day be the champion and the hero of the town. And this was when the character was level 1. Now he's level 10, and he's pretty buff, if you ask me.
Aslan is pretty rough. He's pretty thick. So.
And so
he's wicked with a bow too. So.
And so I used the second one for a new character that I created, who's first level, called Silas the Quick. And the trick with this one was that the background story was really interesting. He got the nickname the Quick because he actually worked on a ship. And so he's like a sailor, or he used to have a background in being a sailor, but he's actually a rogue. And so that's usually my thought process, is first step before I even look at what type of characters, I kind of see what the party needs. And then depending on if what they need is something I will be willing to play, because, I'm always looking for something different and unique, something that I haven't tried before. So I guess I'm always trying to get out of my comfort zone.
And this, I had to be kind of dragged kicking and screaming to a point where a good friend of mine who was running Tomb of Annihilation, he wanted 3 characters generated, because they recommend that. And he said, none of your characters can be spellcasters, Great Tome. And I'm like, what? He's like, no, I'm going to take you out of that comfort zone. You can create 3 characters. None of them can be spellcasters. Now, he did allow me the bard, because a lot of people came back and said, well, bard's a spellcaster. And I'm like, yes, that is to a certain extent true. He did allow it. for one, I was really kind of hating on Bards as a character, and I learned a lesson, a valuable lesson there, because that's Duluth Greytome, and I'm loving the Bard class. It's just such a cool, fun thing to play, and it's a class where I was like, oh, I literally made the statement, why play a Bard? Why not play a real class? Because I'm like, it's just an amalgamation of like, oh, they put everything together. It's a jack of all trades. There's nothing there. And I was very wrong with that. So I was really glad to be drawn out of that. But I agree too, you know, looking at the party, before I always took the wizard, because a lot of people weren't necessarily going for the wizard class. And that's kind of how I ended up doing this, because people necessarily didn't want to play spellcasters. They wanted to play thicker, tougher characters that could get into bigger fights, have more hit points, a lot of power up front. And especially in some older editions of Dungeons and Dragons, the wizard was a slow burn. You know, you, as you got later in level, you really were powerful, but at lower levels, you weren't as much. Changed a little bit now with 5th edition, you know, it's where everyone kind of starts off a little tougher than you did a long time ago. And the introduction of cantrips has been a huge thing where spellcasters can keep contributing to a party. So I usually ended up that way. Now it's, okay, what does the group need? And then what haven't I played? What haven't I done? You know, it's just, I've kind of widened my horizon. So, you know, I haven't played a cleric in a game ever. Never played a cleric. Always played wizards. Now I'm kind of getting that. That's something I've got kind of an idea. I want to kind of work out how that character would work into this whole genre. So it's something, hopefully a game comes up where I'll get a chance to do that. But a cleric's pretty common one. I've got friends who really do enjoy playing clerics. And I'm like, you know what, you do you, because you know, you enjoy that. And you know, once you kind of hash out what the party might need. With stats, yeah, I kind of like the standard array nowadays, as opposed to rolling, you know, a lot of house rules, you know, 4d6, drop the lowest one, reroll ones and twos, you know, it's going to give you higher buffer characters. And recently I just said, you know, take the standard array. It's 15, 14, 13, 12, 10, and 8, and you're off to the races, you know, apply those. So it gives you a good span, and it really does break down with the balance out pretty well. If you look at the point buy system they have in 5th edition, it works out to that.
I just have to add on to that. I do think it's a good idea to go with the standard character array or the point buy system rather than rolling the dice. Don't get me wrong, I have nothing against rolling dice, but I think it adds a little bit too much uncertainty, and therefore sometimes you could have a really uber character, or you could have a really weak character, and I've found that most players would rather discard what they consider or perceived as a weak character, which I don't really think there's no such thing as a weak character if played properly. But then again, that's just my opinion.
No, I think that's really the thing. When you're doing character generation, I think there's too much focus on the stats that, oh, I need an 18 in something at first level. You know, it's really, I do kind of like the standard array that it does force you to take that 8. You know, it's a below average score. It's not a horrible score. And in 5th edition, if you play a human, you're going to be a minimum 9 anyway in it, because you're going to get a +1 on all of your ability scores with the basic human stat block. But it does give you, it's like, yeah, you're good at some things. You're above average in a lot of things. But there's one or two things where you're average or below average. You know, you're not going to be uber strong in every category. You're not going to have, you know, 18 strength, a 16 con, a 17 intelligence, a 15 wisdom. You know, it's like these other higher stats that people see as like, oh, well, now I'm super strong. I get a huge bonus to my hit points and my con. I'm great on my saves. And it's like, but your first level, you're starting at these huge stats, and your first level, where do you grow into the character? You know, the maximum's 20. So for an ability score in 5th edition, now, and a lot of my examples are going to be 5th edition, because next, outside of your Pathfinder game, everything I'm playing right now is 5e, which I would like to branch out into some other things too. But I have a little bit of experience with building characters in, you know, Starfinder, which I ran for a short period of time. But yeah, I really kind of feel that, you know, yeah, you could do a lot with a quote unquote weaker character. That there's a lot of room to grow, and that, you know, you're going to have to improvise and play smarter than someone who's going to be, you know, maxed out in their ability scores because they rolled and rolled well, or like you said, they don't like the character stats, they're going to trash that character, let's re-roll them. And that people, like, if I don't have at least 118, then I'm not really playing. And I just don't really feel that's true. And I typically now I kind of like characters with a good blend of ability scores, high and low. It's just, I think it forces me as a player to be a little more creative, that I'm not the best at everything. And I'm in games where people are like, oh yeah, this person always rolls well with their stats. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's cool, but is there, what about the challenge? What about the storytelling aspect of it, where it's like, hey, you know, I'm not the strongest in this area. I've got to make up for that. But, you know, hey, I've got other party members that are. So what do I bring to the table in that? And so when I'm looking at character stats, you know, yeah, I do want a high score in my principal stat for the character. You know, it's just whatever that may be, and get that as high as I can. I like playing human characters, and part of that is kind of metagaming, that I know that whatever stats I get, I'm going to be able to increase each one of them by 1 point as a human. You know, some of the other races, half elf, whatnot, give me some other splits. But, you know, I go a lot of times with I play, and that kind of ties into the narrative that I tell with the characters, because it kind of limits me too, because of the way that these characters are all related to one another. I'm kind of boxed into a corner where I can play a human, a elf, a half elf, or a half orc. And the elves would kind of marry into the family potentially. You know, but it's mostly going to be humans, half elves, and half orcs.
Could you be an adopted gnome?
Yes, yeah, see, that you could do.
You could get creative, but all joking aside, you did bring up something that I wanted to further ask. Besides my game, what other game, when you actually generate your character, you actually focus on less combat and more on skills?
Skills. Okay, I have learned that lesson the hard way in your game. But no, there was this was before I kind of made that shift where I'm like, I'm stepping out of the box. I was still in my comfort zone and was starting to explore. It was kind of pushed the little boundaries, but not much. I created a sorcerer. And instead, this sorcerer, it wasn't so much the skills that I took, because a lot of those are dictated by your class. And I do try to get a good blend of them, because it is something. And all too often, unfortunately, I think we focus too much on combat. And that's something that I've really tried to learn from you. Next is that, you know, skills are important. Things beyond just hack and slash. Because I can fall into that same pitfall. People want the action, and the action has a place. But with this particular character, this is Gareth Greytome. He is more of a Swiss Army sorcerer. I'm not into the offensive spells. I was like, well, everybody takes magic missile. Everyone's going to take firebolt. But I'm like, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm going to take Unseen Servant, Mage Hand, Grease. Yeah, my only offensive spell really was Melf's Acid Arrow. I took utility spells. I wanted to go a different route with this, as opposed to the character just being all about the offensive part of it. And he went to the Conjuration School. So it's not an evocation guy. He's not a blow it up, set it on fire, blast it with a lightning bolt type of character. And I don't take those spells. I've tried adding things like Dust Devil. Xanathar's Guide introduced the cantrip Infestation, which is a conjuration, which is pretty brutal. Swarms of insects like crawl over and sting people. But, you know, it's pretty ruthless, but it's conjuration. It falls in the school and the theme of the character. But that was about as offensive as I got. Because I was like, well, he's a conjurer. He's not going to have or put time into these offensive spells. He's going to conjure creatures that are going to do those things for him. So, but I do try to get an even blend of skills and not just things that are going to help me in combat. Which kind of also, I try and, well, yeah, I have a concept like, okay, what school of magic is the character going to work in? How's that going to go? And with some other characters, you know, because in 5e, a lot of cool things happen at third level. And I've had debates with characters. It's like, okay, when you're creating them and you're picking these skills, you're picking your various abilities that you're going to have, does this character know where they're going to be at third level? Is their life already destined? As the player, I do. This is the school. This is what I want to do. I'm going to make a ranger. It's going to be a beastmaster. So everything I do at first level is going to be for beastmaster. I'm going to take animal handling. I'm going to do all these things to tie into that. Well, does the character know that they're going to get there? You know, how's that narrative work? What's that journey? And it's something where we talk a little bit about builds, and it's like, well, you went with this kind of build for your character. Why would you choose that skill and not this one? Why'd you go with that feat and not this one? And I really don't like doing that when I'm kind of working a character concept, because I don't like to just to do the thing that is going to give me the most damage in combat. You know, which unfortunately a lot of times the feats are just used for that. They like, okay, everyone has to take a Mage Slayer. You know, it's like, well, somebody casts next to you. It's like, take that one, because he's the evil spellcaster. When he goes to cast a spell on me, I get that reaction attack. And he's got disadvantage on concentration checks. And, you know, that's all good, but there's other abilities that you can take that help out in other ways. Maybe not even in combat, things that you can do. There's some other feats that could be useful. But when I'm choosing skills, I kind of think in terms of what's going to be beneficial to the character. It's going to be in an environment. How am I going to round out their education with it? And then I try and not create characters that it's like, well, I'm going to be this point level 3, then at level 7, and then at level 10, then at level 15. And when I eventually get to level 20, it's all at first level. I've already mapped out this character's life. Because I'm like, maybe I'm going to change my mind. It's happened where I've started a character and I'm like, this isn't working. This isn't really what I want to do. And you know, my personal philosophy is I have had characters come back and say, listen, hey, I have one player, please, Kane in our Curse of Strahd game. And he loves playing Kensai monks. Always did that. Fifth edition didn't have the Kensai. The Kensai came out when Xanathar was released. We'd already started the game. He approached me and was like, I'd really like to play a Kensai. You know, I love playing Kensais. Can I change my monk? And I was like, okay, you know what? It's not a huge deviation. I'll let you change it. But a lot of games where it's, no, this is, if you can't just make that alteration to it. I've had to go back in and relearn and redo talents as I level up, where I'm like, you know, this build's not coming together the way I wanted. This concept I had doesn't seem to be working as well as I like. But, you know, you work with it and you kind of grow with it and you figure out where. And I thought it kind of gave it a more of a realistic spin to the character that they were kind of figuring out what they were doing in life. Their whole life wasn't planned out, because when they're going to choose their adventuring life, it's not like, well, here's the book. This is where I'm going to go. This is my whole talent tree. I need this talent, that feat. I'm going to get this at 7th level. So if I do this here at 3rd level, it'll benefit me better at 11th. You know, is that, a lot of people do that. I mean, the book's there. You can map out the character. You get this idea. It's like,
well, what you really touched on is that the character creation, or the whole character creation, should be an ongoing fluid process. Like, you should always be adjusting and updating your character. Because obviously if the character survives, it's going to evolve and get new skills, which is one of the reasons that I really do like the Pathfinder. Because if, let's say, you generate a character and then you don't like some of the skills, or you don't think that they're being utilized the best that you can, you can go back and retrain and give up some of those skills and get new skills, provided you find trainers, of course. But it gives you an option to tailor it to the world that you're in.
No, and I have done that. I had a fourth edition game that I'm running right now where I was trying to do like an arcane trickster thing, you know, kind of like what I was doing with your game and with the sorcerer I started, where I was trying to do that, and it was working pretty well. I was starting to get that really kind of humming along, where that character was coming together. But when I tried in fourth edition, I really wasn't liking it. It just wasn't really playing out, and it's not going the way I had it planned. And I was like, I just don't like this. So I retrained and, you know, decided to ditch the whole rogue ability, and then went with a familiar and starting building that up and focusing more on the magic side of it and less on the rogue side of it, kind of letting that go to the wayside. But it was something where it sounded like a cool idea on paper, was doable, but when I was playing it and it just wasn't working on it, it just wasn't fulfilling for me. I wasn't really excited. I didn't really feel like I was unique in the group. And so I found something else to do, and it worked out well. So it's, you know, it's the evolution of it, you know, where I started at level one and where that character now is at level five, it wasn't the same place, you know, so it did change. And I think players need to kind of keep that open, that, yeah, you can retrain some things and tweak it, because you don't want to necessarily plan out the entire character's career. But I see a lot of people, to maximize things, they'll do that. And they know that, hey, I've got to do this in this order. These are the feats you take. Forget the other feats, because those aren't going to contribute. Those. And it's just like, you know, I see them, they always pick the same feats because they know they get special. Now, I'm guilty of it.
And, you know, we call those people min-maxers.
Exactly. And yeah, I'm pretty bad at it because I always take Spell Sniper. You know, a 240-foot firebolt, you know. It's one I really like because it increases that range. You can ignore cover. You know, it's really cool, you know, and it's a feat I always take. And I'm like, okay, I got to kind of mix this up a little bit more. But, you know, it's one of my favorite options to go with if I'm playing a wizard class. I haven't had a lot of experience playing with the other classes, so I'm kind of learning where that goes. And I'm enjoying it because I haven't done this ad nauseum time and time again where, oh, well, you know, hey, I can cast third level spells. Here we go. We're in Fireball. You know, it's what if I chose not to take that? Does everybody study Fireball? Not necessarily. It's a hugely powerful, or it's a very powerful spell, and it's a very popular spell for obvious reasons. Same thing with Lightning Bolt, but what if I want to choose something else? Want to go a different direction with it? And that's something on me as a player, where it's doing something other than the School of Evocation. But when I put the character together, I'm trying to put something together that I'm going to have fun with the story. And for me, there's a larger narrative. And it's, where's this character going to fit into my own story? And then if something does happen to that character, which can happen, I can replace the character with a new one. And that's kind of the joke I make, that there's always another Grey Tome. You know what? One may die, but another family member will step up. And so it actually kind of eases that off. And I have lost characters, and, you know, it stinks, you know. They just got going, it seemed. It's like they had their whole life ahead of them, but it just wasn't in the cards. And, you know, it's just like, okay, then now what? Thankfully, I have this whole concept that lets me then go back to square one and say, okay, who's the next one up? What's the next character? How am I going to fit this in? What am I going to do? So I have some flexibility if something bad does happen to a character, that there's other concepts, versus I've seen people are like really into that one character that they have. And if something were to happen to that character, it'd be kind of a shock to them. So it's like, well, hey, I've got this character up to 8th level, 9th level, 10th level. I was planning to take him all the way to 20th. And yeah, and it gets into, okay.
That sounds like Aslan to me.
No, that couldn't possibly be. So, don't worry, Aslan's going to be vampire bait, you know. So, I mean, yeah, he's got a, you know, a wide selection of fates that he could have, assuming he survives Ravenloft. But just don't get too attached to him. You know, and our next podcast will be what happens when your favorite character gets eaten by a vampire. I think this is going to be an important podcast where I'll get everybody together and you can all share the stories of how, you know, you kind of fell in utter defeat and were released back as vampire spawn. But hey, you know, that's a good story too, because who doesn't like playing a vampire? But
I would say this one thing, excuse me, is that I think you would agree with me that the biggest thing in character creation is to do something that you think you will have fun with.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's got to be a character that you want to play. And I think this kind of gets into, oh, well, I'll play whatever. And there are a lot of players that will say that, like, oh, well, whatever the party needs. But are you going to enjoy it? You know, you're going to be potentially doing this for several hours a night but when you're playing. And this could be a long-term thing, depending on what the character's created for. And are you going to enjoy? Is this really something you want to play? And I try to get at that, just saying that, you know, hey, I get what the party needs, but what do you want to play? Don't feel like you have to play a cleric because the party doesn't have one. What do you want to play? Well, what character do you want to work with? Okay, so now that we know what everybody wants to play, okay, how do we fill some of those voids? And I think it's interesting, you know, because then some threats become a little more serious. You know, if you don't have a cleric in the party, getting bit by a werewolf at fourth or fifth, sixth level, it's pretty bad because nobody's going to have that lesser restoration, you know, or remove curse. You know, if you don't have that available, you could run into some problems. But that might be a challenge. Not everybody has a cleric in the party. Now, it's good to have a good balance because, yeah, you can really benefit from some of those abilities. But, you know, is it going to be fun? And then how do you work around it? You've got that shortcoming. What do you do to make it up? You know, you're missing something. And it's like, how do we keep the party going along? So, but no, you're absolutely right. I think the core thing is when you're doing character generation, if you're taking the time to put this character together, because it does take time, it's an investment. And you know, you're planning to play them for some period of time. Make sure it's something you enjoy. Rule number one, you know, and work with the DM, ask them, I really want to play this type of character. Based on the group, is that going to work? And you know, our group, I remember your first Pathfinder game, Nexa, it's just, I was doing the whole arcane trickster thing without realizing half the party had rogue. You know, I wasn't unique in this. Everybody, there were a couple straight rogues, a couple other multi-class characters. And I'm like, oh, well, they really don't need another rogue in this party. But, you know, it was still a lot of fun. I kind of found my way of working into it, you know, and, you know, Pathfinder allowed me a little flexibility. But, you know, and it, again, that was one where it's kind of changed and it didn't necessarily end up where I thought it was going to start, or it didn't end up where I thought it would at the beginning. It still enjoyed it thoroughly. So, and I guess really.
Even when you got lost in the dungeon?
And one of our players claimed he never gets lost. I gotta bring that one up. But yes, when we got lost, and that's where a good skill balance is going to come in. You know, think about what you're going to need when you're out there in the adventuring world. It's not going to be what do I do to maximize two hit. You're going to need other skills at some point. You're going to need to save against things. You're going to need to figure things out. You will ultimately get lost somewhere and have to figure out which way's north.
And I think that brings up another good point with character creation is that it depends on the game. For example, if you're just doing a quick one shot just to try something out, chances are it is going to be really combat heavy. And so you may want to just pick those combat related skills. But if you know you're going on a long campaign that's going to be going on for years or for at least a year or months, then maybe you want to pick a good mixture. So you also have to know the campaign that you're going to be playing in and what type of adventure it's going to be. So I can see in some instances where you want to go full-blown combative.
Oh, sure. It's really going to depend on what, because a one-shot adventure, like you said, it's probably going to have a little, what is it? Most recommended formats are, you know, some sort of RP encounter, a minor combat encounter, then a large or major combat encounter, you know, basically a three-act play that builds up where you have a little bit of interaction and then suspense builds up and then you kind of conclude the adventure. So yeah, there's going to be emphasis on combat. And what level are you starting at? If it is a one shot, are you starting at fifth level? Are you starting at first level? Again, most of my experience being 5e, at first level, you really don't pick a lot of things. Most of the big choices are made at third level. When you're starting to choose like a Paladin's Oath, the Ranger's type that you're working with, different things that you're going to have to make a choice for. And I really think that a lot of that is, you know, when you're creating the character first level, that you haven't quite figured out what those are yet. But all too often it's, okay, I'm this at first level, I'm going to take this oath as a paladin. So when I hit third level, I'm doing this. Maybe your thoughts will change. A source book might come out. There might be something else. And, you know, so it adds some flexibility to it. But yeah, definitely asking about what's needed in the group. Is it going to be a long-term play? Is it a couple nights? Is it just a module? I'm running the Secrets of Saltmarsh, or Ghosts of Saltmarsh, sorry. The Ghosts of Saltmarsh, the Sinister Secret of Saltmarsh, which is a three-module portion of this book. These are older adventures that have been updated for 5e, and the characters created, players created first level characters. And I said, you know, we're going to play through the first three modules, Sinister Secrets of Saltmarsh, and then the two following it. And then we're going to go back to our eighth level D&D campaign, that the homebrew campaign, that just wrapped up after 2 years. I just needed to take a little bit of a break. So I told everybody new first level characters. And I said that you can do whatever you want to do with the background. These new characters can know your other characters if you want, because those characters were awarded a keep. They did this great thing. They've got it. And as we're adventuring here, their mains, for lack of a better term, are kind of setting up their new manor house and their headquarters and then getting ready for their next great adventure. So you create these characters for Secrets of Saltmarsh. They can have whatever background you want. They can know your other character. They don't have to. The party kind of collectively decided that they're all from Saltmarsh. They all know each other. A few of them are connected to their main character. So I'm like, you'll be able to call them up potentially. You know, they'll be lower level, but you have allies. I said, so when you're creating these characters, this background is up to you. How interconnected do you want them to be? Because while we are kind of using them as, I kind of let my creative reservoir refill to move along, it's something that, you know, it's not just a vacuum. These characters, if you just want to use them as one shot and you're not really ever planning to bring them back again, that's okay. If it's somebody that you'd want to have interact with your higher level character at some point, that's perfect too. Just let me know. So, and that group had a mixture of it. So when I told them to create their characters, it's just, you know, hey, I gave them a pretty wide creative license. Because yes, these characters are a short-term commitment. You know, we're starting at first level and kind of working our way up. So a lot of them haven't had to make the big decisions, but I'm planning to get them to that point. You know, they'll get to third level by the time they're done with this. And they'll have to make some of those decisions. And, you know, these characters will get a couple levels and then we'll come back, but origins up to them. And that group kind of runs the range of people that have written out character origins for me, which I don't really subscribe to the belief that, you know, that's this ways that the DM can screw you over. Give me some background stuff and I can really make your character's life miserable. It's how are you connected to that world? You know, I want to know. I'm not going to throw this at you. Yeah, there might be complications because of that, but it's not necessarily all weakness. It's not all trouble for you. It also grounds them, and I'll work that in there because I want the players to be involved in it. So when they're creating this character, it's not just a bunch of stats on a piece of paper. Bring them to life. Have some fun with them. Like you said, next time, have fun with it. You know, and it's just, what needs to get you there? I've got characters who write very elaborate backgrounds out, and those backgrounds are being woven into the campaign. You know, I've got my story I want to tell, but I want to bring them into it, and I can hook their storyline into it. And it's like, hey, this affects my character. I mentioned, you know, we had a half drow. The drow house that was after him came hunting him, you know. So it's just and there's a whole playthrough of that, and that's going to have ramifications going along, but it brings the character in, it connects the character to the story, and it was really something fulfilling for me. Really enjoyed kind of playing through that, and that's like where the twists and turns.
Great. Well, that was very interesting. And I think that's all we have for today. So, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I could keep going all night, you know, but I don't think people want to tune in and listen to me ramble along. But I really think you hit on two big points. I really think, next, that you picked up on, that stats aren't everything. That, you know, don't get preoccupied with having high stats in every single category. You know what? There is no such thing as a weak character. Yeah, the characters, you can grow into them, and you'll have to work with their weaknesses. Just, hey, every great hero has some sort of weakness. Nobody wants to, even Superman has a weakness. You know, it's, no one wants to see somebody who's invulnerable and this kind of marches through and wades through enemies, and then have fun with the character. When you're creating it, make sure it's something you're going to have fun with. You know, so.
Because after all, isn't that the whole point?
Exactly. If we're not having fun doing this, why do it? Exactly. Absolutely. I think that's rule number one.
Well, thank you, Gray Tome, and I want to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us comments in the comment section below, or topic ideas. If there's something that you would like to hear us talk about or discuss, you could put those questions in the comment section, and I promise you we will read them. I don't know whether we'll discuss them, but depending, you never know.
Absolutely. We love your feedback, and definitely that's why we do this. You know, we hope this is helpful to you, or at least at the very basic level, that it's maybe a little entertaining to hear us kind of talk about our experiences. And yeah, we look forward to your feedback, your suggestions. You know, thank you so much. You're why we do this, and hope you all have a great night.
Thanks, everyone, and take care.
Take care, everybody.